Representative Cantrell moves the minutes of February 13th, 2020. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. Motion passes. The minutes of February 13th are approved. That was the only one, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Representative Christensen, are you here? There you are. The first bill we have for consideration is House File 3095, removing race from data on certificates of marriage reported to the state registrar and requiring marriage license applications to be modified. I will move Representative Christensen's bill, House File 3095, be recommended to be re-referred to the HHS Policy Committee, and we have the bill before us. Representative Christensen, welcome to the committee, Judiciary Committee. You have a DE1 amendment. Is that the case?
Yes, Chair, I do.
Okay, thank you. Does everyone have a copy of the DE1 amendment? So I will move that to get the bill in the shape that the author so desires, I'll move the DE1 amendment. Any discussion? All in favor of the DE1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, say no. Motion passes. Representative Christensen, tell us about your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. On January 15th this year, 2020, an article came out in the Minneapolis St. Paul magazine titled, Why Do Minnesota Marriage License Applications Ask for Race? Minnesota is one of seven states that still ask this question. So the article prompted a constituent to email me and talk to me about looking into to the whys of this. So according to Minnesota Statute 1.44223 in 1977, Clause 1, a couple has to provide the following information: name, address, dates, places of birth, signature, race, social security numbers, and previous marriages. However, in the early 2000s, the National Center for Health Statistics began to require only an annual tally of marriage licenses. So as a result of a deeper dive into the issue of marriage license language, we discovered that it was time to remove and or amend some of the language in the bill. The bill makes some changes to antiquated terms like bride and groom. The bill makes technical changes under Chapter 517. It eliminates applicants having to identify the sex of each party, and it clarifies the race data that will not be collected. It allows registers to provide a standardized marriage certificate that officiants can use across the state. By removing the antiquated language and eliminating the requirement to report the data that is never used, we'll save taxpayer money, reduce staff time, and remove perceptions of bias and discrimination. I'd like to introduce Barb Olson here. She's a service center manager with Hennepin County, and she's going to add some insight to the changes.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Olson. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Barbara Olson, and I work with Hennepin County. I am a longtime member with Hennepin County and have overseen the vital records unit for 6+ years now. HF 3095 specifically relates to marriage records. This bill is important to us, the local registrars of Minnesota, because it eliminates the use of old, unnecessary terminology. It will save staff time, which in turn will save taxpayer money. HF 3095 also provides a clear direction for what information the local registrar should and should not be collecting. I want to provide a little bit more detail on each pieces of the bill. Section 144.223 is a report of marriage. It directs us, the local registrar, to collect and report to the Department of Health 9 pieces of data. Local registrars have always reported that information up until 2004-2005. At that time, the Department of Health stopped requesting the information. I noted earlier that there were 9 pieces of data that we collect. Race is one of them. I get complaints from customers several times a year asking why we are collecting that information. I also get complaints asking why we have the terms, or why we use the terms bride and groom. Today we use the words applicant. Another reference in 144.223 directs us to collect certain information regarding the marriage. After a marriage occurs, the marriage certificate is filed. We have to store data for the date of marriage, the place of marriage, and whether it's a civil or religious ceremony. Staff data enter these three pieces of data into our database. This process consumes a lot of staff time. Hennepin County last year processed over 8,000 marriage licenses, and it does equate to time and money. Chapter 51708, application for license. This details what we should and should, what we should include in the actual application. We're asking that the indicator of sex be removed. We add the date of birth and the number of current marriage license application information for all previous marriages. Chapter 51710 is in regard to marriage certificates. Every county in Minnesota has their own technology system that is used to create, file, and maintain their county marriage records. Tracking typically uses a barcode to keep all of this information together. Chapter 517.10 will add language that requires the marriage officiant to use the marriage certificate that is provided to them. This will eliminate any technical problems that could occur. I'm asking you to pass HF 3095. It is an important bill to all the local registrars.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Olson. And Representative Christensen, do you have other testifiers? It's the staff from Department of Health. Oh, that's only for questions. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, are there questions from members? Representative Scott? No? Okay. You look. The look on your face looked like you had a question. Okay. Yeah, I thought you were like wringing your hands ready to get going. Okay. No questions. Is there anyone from the audience who would like to be heard on House File 3095 as amended? Yes, Chair Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill. This is, I hadn't heard about this before, and I'm just wondering, is there no use for any of this information? Like, do people not do research on it, or, are we losing something? You know, I get that there are a lot of good reasons not to collect it, but is there nothing for which this gets used that's worth keeping it all?
Well, and is that a question for Representative Christensen or for Ms. Olson?
I think for Ms. Olson, maybe.
Well, I will ask that and add to that, Ms. Olson. That's kind of my question, too. We're removing race from marriage applications, and we're trying to get the cops to collect race data, right? So we're adding it to other stuff, and it's for very specific reasons on that. So is there anyone complaining or saying that there's a reason why this stuff should be collected?
Complaints about it?
Well,
yes.
I don't know. I guess, are there any arguments for keeping it?
Not that I see.
Okay.
Because all we get are complaints. Why are you doing this? What is this information for?
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Seeing none, then I'll renew my motion that House File 3095, as amended, be re-referred to Committee on Health and Human Services Policy. All in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. All opposed say no. Motion passes. The bill is re-referred to HHS policy. Thank you, Representative Christensen.
Thank you, members, and thank you, Chair.
I don't think we hazed her on treats either, did we?
Whoa, Shelley.
No, she kind of left the table already, so once that happens, she's kind of out of your jurisdiction. I should have caught it before she left the table.
Reminder.
That falls to you.
Huh?
Representative Christensen?
Yeah, that is my fault. The buck stops here.
Not hearing us.
Okay, so I got to go down to the table. And Representative Mueller will take the gavel.
right, members, the bill we'll be hearing next is House File 3009, regulating the use of unmanned aerial vehicles by law enforcement agencies. Chair Lesh, would you like to move this bill?
I would, Madam Chair.
Okay, Chair Lesh moves that House File 3009 be placed on the general register. And I believe, Mr. Chair, that you have an amendment.
I do, Madam Chair. The A1, and I am adding that the reports that need to be turned into the legislature to be reported to committees or divisions, I'm adding a comma for clarity.
Okay, and it is my understanding that the amendment was posted late, but the authors discussed it with Mr. Scott, and there's no objection. Is that correct?
What did you get out of it?
I think so, Madam Chair.
That's correct.
Yes, okay.
That's correct.
Thank you. Does everyone have a copy of the amendment? Any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And Chair Lesh, go ahead and tell us about your bill, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, UAVs, commonly referred to as drones, this has been an issue that's been in the air for years. I'm a dad, so I get to do dad jokes. Or I could have said it's been buzzing around too, but so I used to fly UAVs as part of my job in the military, and it was rather interesting. There were different sizes they had of them, and now years later, of course, they have much smaller ones for use and accessible by the private market as well as by law enforcement. They present unique capabilities to surveil people, and right now in Minnesota, there are no rules or laws whatsoever about how they're used, no state rules. So this bill changes that, and it requires that law enforcement secure a warrant before using a drone, subject to certain defined exceptions. There are legitimate public safety reasons to use these UAVs, as we've all discussed, a missing child, a natural disaster, or a car crash, reconstruction, as well as pragmatic reasons such as training. These reasons, with law enforcement's input, have been written into this bill in Subdivision 3 as exceptions to the warrant requirement. However, there are also important guardrails for law enforcement's use. No facial recognition technology, no weapons, and reporting and notice requirements. So this bill has been in the works for years, and like I said, this committee tackles, I guess, looming issues in data collection every few years, and it seems like the UAV question has always gotten bogged down when we were having to tackle major issues like cell phone exploitation devices or license plate readers or body cams, and so we didn't get to this. And it was always on the cusp every year, but this year we're getting to it, and we got a deal. And I'd like to thank the ACLU and law enforcement and the other stakeholders for their discussions in the interim and their work in the Subcommittee on Data Practices. So we have the bill before you, and I think the ACLU is testifying.
Yeah. Come on forward. Ms. Decker, please introduce yourself, and you can begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, my name is Julia Decker. I'm the Policy Director for the ACLU of Minnesota. As Chair Lesh has alluded to, this bill before you is the result of a number of years of work and negotiation with law enforcement stakeholders, including over the interim. So as some of you may recall, the ACLU started out in a much different place on this issue, had more stringent requirements for law enforcement and fewer exceptions from getting a warrant. Now, law enforcement has testified in past hearings about the many powerful public safety uses of drones. And through numerous discussions around this issue, we've agreed to compromise to include some of those uses as additional exceptions to the warrant requirement. Nevertheless, it is essential to have guidelines and guardrails for drone use by law enforcement, and HF 3009 imposes much needed limits where there currently are none. And we acknowledge there's been testimony and commentary in past hearings that argued this bill doesn't go far enough. But right now there is no state law regulating law enforcement use of drones, whether it's for locating a missing child or secretly surveilling somebody just going about their everyday life. It takes one Google search to see how rapidly drone use by law enforcement agencies is proliferating, And so this bill fills a gaping void in the current state law. ACLU of Minnesota supports this bill while remaining wary of and watchful for the proliferation of new and ever more powerful technologies that can present additional threats to privacy rights and civil liberties. So thank you, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Tucker. And I think there's at least one more person who wants to testify, and then we'll have questions after that. So thank you. Is there someone else from the audience who wishes to testify? I think it's Cass Wieland. Yep, come on down. Hi, welcome. Please introduce yourself and you can begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Cass Wieland. I am a member of Restore the Fourth Minnesota, and I am a cybersecurity consultant and penetration tester. Like the ACLU, I support this bill because there really isn't anything on the books right now regulating drone use. And when you're in the technology field and when you understand the inherent risks involved in in these kinds of systems, then you have to understand that we need more regulation about this technology, especially when it can, especially when you consider the risks of it being misused and abused by not only law enforcement, but by criminals as well. I feel like there are a couple things that could make the bill stronger or that can maybe be addressed at in another bill. Most of it has to do with under subdivision 4, the part B, the governing body overseeing the law enforcement agency must approve the agency's acquisition. That's great. What I would love to see is I would love to see something else that says that they have to have like a public meeting that includes you mentioned in other parts, in another place of the bill, that they have to have documentation about how it's used and rules regarding how the technology is used. I would like to see a requirement that says you got to have a public meeting and you have to solicit public input regarding regarding that decision. What I would worry about is that the oversight body just approves it without soliciting any public input from the constituency that it's affecting. So. Stronger language there would make me very happy. otherwise, some of the exemptions that are listed under the warrant, some of the exemptions under the warrants have me worried. Like, you have language later in the bill that talks about how you can't use it for protests, but one of the exemptions for warrants says that if it's, I think it was number 2, over a public event where there's a heightened risk of safety of the participants, that's essentially every protest that I've been to. So I don't see how some of the exemptions under the authorized use part for could probably be pruned or changed, because I feel like it took me a little bit to think of a situation where there wouldn't be an exemption and where they would be required to get a warrant, and you know, they can use it if they have reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. You know, it makes, you know, you mentioned that it can be used for search and rescue after, you know. Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of great ways that this technology can be used, but the number of exemptions here is a little bit worrying, but it is better than nothing. One last thing is I would like to see some more, perhaps not in this bill, but another bill, I'd like to see some requirements surrounding security audits and making sure that the technology itself is using robust, you know, cybersecurity protocols.
All right. Thank you so much. I think we'll do questions from members right now. Chair Considine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a little unclear, and I just want some clarification. It says a drone can go over public area. Can they go over my property with a camera for any reason without a warrant?
Chair Lesh.
Why don't I have research explain that specifically? I think it'd be better, more credible, since I'm the bill author.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, so as written, what the bill says is that they can only go over public areas without a warrant. There may be some question down the road about whether a public area includes an area that is a certain level in the air above a facility. There is Supreme Court case law related to surveillance airplanes and the use of those airplanes. However, these drones also have to comply with restrictions regarding how high they're allowed to operate. To be perfectly frank, I don't know where those lines are drawn currently, so I can't say if there is any gray area where they would be permitted to operate under that Supreme Court case law.
Chair Constein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So as I understand this, they could go down the alley behind my house, surveying on either side things that are going, you know, the neighborhood barbecue, or and there would not be restrictions on that. Would that be?
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair and Representative Constantine, so the bill as drafted essentially requires a warrant as the initial step. In order for law enforcement to not use a warrant, it must fall under one of these authorized exceptions, which appears in Subdivision 3. So simply going down an alley with no other justification that's under one of these subdivisions would not be permitted use. If going down that alley involved, let's say, conducting a threat assessment in anticipation of a specific event, which is Clause 5, then it could go down that alley. But simply to go down on what you might term a fishing expedition would not be permitted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. I feel a lot better about the bill, and thank you to the authors for trying to fill this gap.
Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Chair Lesh. I have just one little question and then a comment after the question's answered. One thing that the operators of these things need to do a lot of, and I don't think that's covered in your bill in the reporting section, is training. They got to practice with them. They might look easy to fly, but to fly them properly and do the recording, they have to do quite a bit of practice with them. And I'm trying to recall what in Lexi Poole's policy that most of the sheriff's office has, what the policy is on the drone. I got to go look it up when I get done with this committee. But with the reporting, is every time that they go out and practice to make sure they can operate it safely and properly, do they have to report those as well?
Well,
Chair Lesh.
If I could have research speak to that too as well, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, there is an exception for operating over a public area for officer training. That's in Clause 8. Was that the heart of your question?
2.2. Yes, that was the heart of my question. I was just more getting it on the record to make sure that people knew that they can operate these without having to report and have it on the record.
Chair Scott.
Madam Chair, just don't have another comment yet.
Oh, so sorry. Go ahead.
Chair Lesh, I want to thank you for bringing this. I started this process back in 2013 when I first got here. We've had a number of bills since then from way up on both sides, from far what I would call radicals. So you basically could never use a unmanned aerial vehicle to being able to use it all the time. This started when I got here. First elected, so I was working as a deputy sheriff, and I had one of my co-employees make the comment that he can't wait till we have drones so he can sit in the office to patrol. And I knew that was wrong, and that's why I started this whole process.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Chair Lesh, thanks for bringing the bill. I'm happy with it, and I don't know how this kind of escaped the data commission and stuff, but we don't have role-based access, and we don't have audit trail requirements in this. Now, I understand, you know, the length of time, you know, they're saying, you know, get rid of the data within 7 days unless it's investigative data. So that gives me some comfort, but I'm just wondering if we might be able to add, you know, our standard operating procedure, our standard operating language with data stuff, and adding role-based access and audit trails being created as the data is looked at. So just wondering if you're amenable to that.
Chair Lesh.
We're looking into it.
Madam Chair and Chair Scott, yes, I am amenable. And if you could maybe prepare an amendment for Where's this going again, Madam Chair? Is this going to the floor?
I think it's going straight to the general register.
Okay, so you want to prepare an amendment? I'll take it as a friendly amendment on the floor, that same standard language that we use.
And I,
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Chair Lesh. And hopefully that's okay with the parties that negotiated this, too. I think they've kind of become accustomed to that sort of language, but hopefully they would be amenable to that as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Chair Scott. Yes, I think so. I mean, I'm sure the departments don't like doing those audit reports, but since they're already doing them, they just have to hit send once, right? So we can talk to them about that, though. Hopefully you can they can have the conversation with you about that as well.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Chair Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Lesh, thank you for doing this. It's I'm glad we are moving in this direction. I have a quick question and then a comment. So the question is, what about what this gentleman brought up about having a meeting that could be open to the public? Is that something that's been considered? Is that not practical, or is that something we could change?
Well, Madam Chair and Chair Liebling, I like it. I think it's a good idea. What I will tell you is that this bill language is the product of a compromise. It does not go as far as my original bill, what I would have preferred. But I appreciate the concessions that each side made in order to get to this. And so we have what we have, and half a loaf is better than one. When I first got elected here, I was swinging for the bleachers all the time, and now I like a good base hit. Mm-hmm. So I think we got an excellent base hit here that we can build off of as we see how things develop.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Lesh. I understand that, how hard this can be sometimes, and I'm glad we're getting started here. My comment, I don't know if any of you went, there was a continuing legal education at the Capitol on Friday, and Justice Thiessen talked about how courts interpret statutory language. It was extremely interesting, and it really made me think about, you were there, right, Chair Moeller?
I missed that portion.
You missed that part. Well, yeah, and so I think what we're doing here, you know, clearly sometimes the legislature is leaving things vague on purpose because we can't reach a compromise on certain things. This strikes me as a very good piece of legislation to get us started, but I see a lot of litigation in its future, and the courts are going to have to, unless we at some point tighten up some of it, the courts are gonna have to do it. And you know, part of Justice Thiessen's point from his experience both as a legislator and as a judge is that judges oftentimes have sort of an unrealistic view of the legislature and what legislative intent is, and they imagine a sort of a fantasy legislature instead of understanding kind of how the sausage gets made. One thing he suggested is keep your notes from a bill when you've worked on a bill and turn them into the legislative law library for safekeeping so that later on courts have something to refer to. But I'm sure they'll be looking back at this hearing, too, to kind of see how we wrestled with some of these issues. But thank you very much.
Thank you. And, Madam Chair, in light of the judges listening in, I just want to say for the record, I love judges. I think they're great. And I would note that in terms of what the courts say and what Justice Thiessen says, and he and I came in together in 2002, and he sat next to me for 4 years on the House floor and used to use a red felt tip and move his papers like this. And I have marks down my sleeves from his red felt tip as he's going through papers and marking. But I would note, Chair Liebling, that almost every year since 2010, the courts have either struck down or modified a bill that I have written, and I have in turn, through legislation, overruled a court action almost every year. So there will continue to be this back and forth about what they think we have to do and what we decide they think they have to do, and this may be one of them as well, but I think that's how we get the good policy in the end.
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Lesh, for bringing this bill forward. And I see that you excluded the facial recognition from this process. But I just wanted to ask about the request for data by individuals who are impacted by this bill, if they wanted to see that information, what is going to be the process? Are they going to be waiting for how long? You know, do we have a timeline? If I request the data from the law enforcement in order for me to receive that data?
Well, my first sentence would be it follows the rest of Chapter 13 on data practices with the exceptions carved in for the 7 days here, but maybe I could ask if research could, again, go into the process for that.
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair and Representative Noor, Representative Lesh is correct. Essentially, the data is supposed to be destroyed within 7 days. Unless it's being used for a law enforcement purpose. If it's being used for a law enforcement purpose, it would get categorized as law enforcement data and be subject to the provisions of Chapter 13 related to law enforcement data. In essence, that data, this is a short version, but can be held by the law enforcement agency until the investigation is complete. If you need more detail on that provision, I'm happy to go into that section of the chapter another time.
Any other member questions? Was there any other testimony from the public? All right, seeing none and no further discussion of the bill, I move that House File 3009 as amended be recommended to be placed on the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. And House File 3009 as amended is recommended to be placed on the general register. And Chair Lesh, I believe you have another bill up next. House File 3012. And would you like to move this bill?
Are we doing 3010 or are we doing 3012 first?
We can do 3010 first if you'd wish. Sure. Let's do that.
I don't care, really.
Okay.
Okay. Well, it's sure. Okay. Thank you. So, yes, I would move that House File 3010 be placed on the General Register, Madam Chair. Oh, you're right. It is in that order in my notes. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, and.
Oh, go ahead, Chair Lesh.
Will this, if I can ask Ms. Ghanani, is this the one that we had the amendment posted but it didn't make deadline?
Right.
Okay. So there is an author's amendment that I'm not going to offer because it didn't make deadline, but we can have discussion on it. And I don't know if we wanted to talk about that or not. We can wait on that. In any case, I'll just speak to the bill as is. Currently, state law in Minnesota allows law enforcement to access the content of your emails without a warrant if the emails are 6 months or older. This would close that six-month loophole and make it clear that law enforcement needs to get a warrant for the content of your emails, regardless of how old they are. This language was part of a bigger bill last session that dealt with a lot of other electronic communications issues, and I can't remember if we have testifiers on this. We do, yes.
Thank you. Did you want to have any discussion, even though we're not going to move the amendment today, any discussion about what it does? Do you want to just explain?
Well, Madam Chair, I would expect, I think a testifier is going to probably speak to it.
Oh, okay, great.
So that's what I...
All right, and I believe, is it Ms. Decker, are you testifying on this bill too? Yep, please come forward. And even though we know who you are, go ahead and introduce yourself, and you can begin.
Yeah, probably be sick of me by the end of this hearing, but I will be brief. Madam Chair and members, Julia Decker, Policy Director for the ACLU of Minnesota. Many or perhaps most of us have emails that are months or even years old sitting in our inboxes right now. Think about how you would feel if somebody went into your inbox and just read all those emails. HF 3010 is a simple fix to this troubling loophole in current state law. That allows law enforcement to read emails without a warrant if they're 6 months old or older. Warrantless surveillance such as this threatens personal privacy rights and civil liberties, and so the ACLU of Minnesota supports a threshold warrant requirement for all emails, regardless of how old they are. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Secker. And I believe, Mr. Whalen, did you want to testify on this bill as well?
Yes.
Okay. Come on down. And if you can reintroduce yourself, please. And go right ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cass Whalen. I'm part of Restore the Fourth Minnesota. Really quick, I would just wanted to add a note of concern under the notice to the subject, I guess, the exceptions under warrant required. in my work doing penetration testing and helping a lot of my clients navigate what kind of services they want to sign up for if they're trying to be more private, I read a lot of TOSs, and a lot of TOSs for a lot of terms of services for a lot of different email providers include language that specifically gives the email provider the ability to share the content of the emails with law enforcement if they request it. And my concern would be that people might be accidentally signing away when they click through that TOS. They might be agreeing to this exception under Part B. I guess it would boil down to what's considered, whether signing that TOS would be considered valid consent or not, and maybe that's something that the courts would have to decide. But that's a concern I have, because a lot of people don't read those terms of services. And a lot of times that they include a lot of broad language that gives the provider the ability to share all sorts of crazy information about who you are and stuff. So,
okay, thank you. Chair Lesh, any comment on that?
Madam Chair, that's a good question. I think from a Fourth Amendment analysis, you would have to expressly waive your Fourth Amendment. And I would doubt that term of service would act as an effective waiver for the purposes of discovery. But I don't know. There's probably someone here smarter in this room than me who could speak to that.
Well, I was going to make a comment, but now I don't want to because I'm not proclaiming to be smarter than you.
You should. You have the gavel.
But I'm also thinking about what the courts might be listening to later on. And the language does say if the agency has valid consent. So that I actually agree. I don't think that would be considered valid consent, just the terms of service, because that's not the agency having that consent for Fourth Amendment purposes. Are there other questions? Is there anybody else from the audience who wishes to testify? And seeing, hi, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and you can begin.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lloyd Grooms and I'm here today on behalf of Google. And actually I'm gonna be speaking to the clause that was just raised. The clause as it currently reads and has been pointed out, it's a valid consent, but if you go on, it says, from one authorized to give. That's a fairly, we believe, ambiguous clause that can lead to confusion and potentially disputes, given we've now raised that question as well. We've offered the amendment, and apologize for the late arrival, to actually say that it's the consent of the customer or subscriber, to make it very clear that it's a limited offer of consent in this circumstance, because it is done without a warrant. Comparable language can be found in 626A.42, where we talk about providing information without a tracking warrant. There we talk about informed consent of the owner or user of the electronic device. So our suggestion is simply that we narrow the scope as to who can give consent to access to the information.
Okay, thank you. Chair Lesh, did you want to comment on that?
Well, now that it's framed in that way, I think I kind of like it. Madam Chair, I don't know if there's other pushback on that. I'd like to hear it, but I'm inclined to ask the committee maybe if we would consider it. It didn't make deadlines, so I would leave it up to the will of the committee to take a look at that, but if there's other input on it, I don't know.
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Chair Lesh. At the risk of setting precedent for every other lobbyist in here that thinks that they can introduce a late amendment and have it adopted, I do think that's good language to put in. And so I don't have an objection. I don't know if my other committee members do, but from my perspective, it's a good amendment.
Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, I think what we did here was use some common sense.
Well, Madam Chair, then I don't know. I mean, I feel like I want to hear from some other folks on it too. Oh, you want to speak to it?
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Evans, come on forward. All right. Welcome to the committee. Go ahead and introduce yourself, and you can begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Drew Evans. I'm the superintendent of the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. The particular discussion you just had, I would have some concerns about, and I think there's a way to maybe work through it. The language that was introduced, you need to think of it from a perspective. There could be multiple subscribers on one particular account. So in a situation, for example, if somebody was an illegal adult, and when you're having the conversation from a consent perspective, they would really be the one authorized to provide consent on that account, but they may not be the actual customer or subscriber on that account. So we would want to make sure that we work through any potential language in a way that people were able to give that. I felt the language, I agree, it's somewhat ambiguous. I don't know that it's that ambiguous to us in law enforcement that the person that would be controlling that phone, for example, in the tracking warrant that was shared, the user is in that situation. If we were to model some of that language to get to the specific person or how the companies may know, I think we could work on that, but I'd have some concern saying only the parent account holder or subscriber is the one that's able to provide consent for that account.
Thank you, Mr. Evans.
Well, that's helpful then, too. This committee is what we do here, right? So I guess what I'd like to do then is hold off and see if they could come up with some comfort language with the stakeholders and then maybe have an amendment for the floor. We're moving this to the floor. Is that right, Madam
Chair?
That's
correct.
Let's do that, and maybe they can work something out on that. Okay.
Thank you. Chair Constein.
I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. Were there any other questions? Any other testimony? All right. Seeing none, I move that House File 3010 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion, that was a really bad gavel. There we go. Sorry about that. The motion prevails and House File 3010 is recommended to be placed on the General Register. And now we'll move to House File 3012.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 3012 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the General Register.
Okay. And there are no amendments to that one. Is that correct, Chair Lesh?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
All right, go ahead and tell us about your bill, please.
So, Madam Chair and members, trying to look around the table and see who is here and remembers tracking warrants. Tracking warrants was this big deal 6 to 10 years ago, and in 2014 we passed a law requiring law enforcement to publicly disclose electronic tracking warrants. New technologies allow for more pervasive and invasive tracking, and the intent was to make sure that the legislature and the public know what's going on with these particular tracking warrants. However, this requirement in practice has not produced the illumination on tracking warrants that the legislature intended, and that was for a complicated set of reasons between law enforcement and judiciary as to whose responsibility it was to handle this, and I spoke quite a bit with various jurists who had strong opinions on one side but then didn't want to come and testify because they got to come and get their hands dirty down here at the legislature and they're not political, and then law enforcement on the other side who we were working with, but it was difficult to arrive at any kind of comity. So the reason that electronic tracking warrants are being bundled with traditional warrants is that it keeps the entire package from being disclosed. So that's what this bill does is it clarifies that the notice requirements for subjects of electronic tracking warrants as well as reporting requirements apply to these types of warrants, and that will ensure that the law in practice works the way that the legislature has intended it to be.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And do you have a testifier?
Yes.
All right. Third time is a charm. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Julia Decker, Policy Director for the ACLU of Minnesota. As Chair Lesh has indicated, the legislature in 2014 intended to shine sunlight on law enforcement's use of electronic tracking warrants. But in practice, as indicated, this sunlight has been sort of stymied or eclipsed. So technologies for tracking people, places, and lots of other information continue to develop and evolve and to be deployed in new and powerful ways, and they should not be deployed in secret. So the clarification provided by HF 3012 helps ensure transparency and provides this body with the information it needs to continue making sound policy around this and other technologies used by law enforcement. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Was there anybody else that wished to testify on this bill? Okay, yeah. Any discussion on the bill? Chair Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Lesh, thanks. I'm glad this finally worked out. You got this worked out. And I think of all the years that we've missed in the in-between time, and hopefully this does go on to pass and become law, but I think of all the years that we've missed in between where the sunlight wasn't shining, as Ms. Decker said, on this process and on these types of warrants. So I'm very, very happy to see this hopefully become law this year.
Thank you, Chair Scott. Any other discussion? All right, seeing none, I move that House File 3012 be recommended to be placed on the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 3012 will be placed on the general register.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, tomorrow we're going to be doing Representative Dean's presidential primary nomination bill, Representative David's wage garnishment, Representative Mahler, your Madam Chair, transfer to minor provisions, and your publishing of Court of Appeals opinions bill. So those four bills are on the agenda for tomorrow.
All right. That's okay. All right. We're adjourned.